Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, urgent investment in mental health facilities is needed as a review found that outdated buildings constrained efforts to curtail COVID-19 outbreaks. A review of care during the pandemic by the Mental Health Commission found 442 cases of the virus between March and July last year. The review, which was published yesterday, states that staff in the residential services which were monitored by the MHC were at higher risk of contracting the disease than residents. To discuss this further, CEO of the Mental Health Commission is John Farley. John, good morning to you and welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
Just remind us, John, what this paper essentially was about. It was recommending, as I said there in the intro, urgent investment in mental health facilities.
Yeah, so the purpose of the paper was basically it set out our work over the last year and how the sector responded and identified kind of the best practice and the lessons for the future. So actually what this paper does was it's from the period April 2020, so if people remember that was peak pandemic, the first wave, to 2021. And just to give people a sense, there was three waves. So the first wave was in that period of April with a peak of 133 cases per week. But it was when most people died, and unfortunately 30 people died in the psychiatric service, mental health services. The second wave was less significant. That was around November last year with a peak of 83 cases a week. And then the third wave was in January this year. That was the biggest wave of the pandemic with 269 cases a week, but with no deaths because the vaccination had kicked in. And I suppose, just to give your sense, listeners a sense, we were monitoring 184 residential mental health or psychiatric facilities that have the capability for nearly 5,000 people to use, and generally about 17,000 to 19,000 people a year are admitted. So you're talking about the acute units around the different parts of the country.
It also found that 36% of the cases were among residents, 64% were staff from different areas, and among staff, nurses were the most badly affected, making up 55% of the cases. So it's not only about the residents here, John, but it's also the staff that are working in these facilities around the country.
Yeah, so one of the things we learned in COVID, look, I don't know about you and your listeners, but in COVID, like, it was bad news after bad news after bad news. People were losing their, you know, grandparents. Kids weren't able to play a bit of football. You weren't even able to get out for a pint, even a walk at some stage. You couldn't get out for a proper walk. And I suppose what this showed and what's proven here is that you often hear this tokenistic thing, the front line. Well, this actually shows that the front line was, it was actually doctors, nurses, care attendants and the cleaning staff were the actual front line in mental health. And the vast 64% of the people that were affected were the staff. And the vast majority of them were nurses, but they were followed by, as I said, the doctors and the caring staff and the cleaning staff. And I suppose a lot of us were wrapped up in our houses, we were protecting ourselves, and these people were working. And one of the things we definitely found from it was it highlights the level of knowledge and expertise by staff regarding infection prevention and control. If you compare it to other areas, what we did was we did a risk assessment mechanism, 2,500 contacts, inspections, gathering data, and it was clear that these people, knowing what they're doing, nurses, doctors, just we can take it for granted that they're well-trained, doing what they're doing, protected people. And even more, when people were dying, they protected them as well, protected them and given them dignity, making sure that the services were there, that where they could, without spreading COVID further, assure the families as much as possible. So I think sometimes that gets forgotten.
You're quoted as well, John, saying that the weaknesses around premises as outlined in this paper won't come as a surprise to anyone who's been reading our inspection reports over the past number of years. So is this something that you've identified could be an issue a number of years ago, but nothing essentially has been done about it?
Yeah, so we've constantly been, you know, raising the issue of mental health buildings and if they're fit for purpose. I mean, you look at NACE, we've been pressing on about NACE, and NACE is now due for replacement. But it comes down to the simple fact is multi-occupancy outdated buildings are really not good for to enable you to comply with infection prevention and control. So put simply, if you're in a room with six people, you have a higher chance of getting an infection than a single occupancy room. So COVID has proven that. Now, we're down to about 15 or 16 buildings, you know, out of the 60 acute units, so that's good. And this year, actually, I mean, the hardest part this last year for me was in Port Leash when you saw people passing away. What counteracted to that a month later was an old similar type building being replaced in Monaghan and the residents being transferred into a brand new single occupancy building. We did that five times, creating registering five brand new buildings, really expediting it. But we are left with these multi-occupancy. And a lot of people don't understand. They think it's a luxury. People think it's a luxury to have a single room in a hospital. You nearly think, you know, you need to be on the best plan of the VHI. And that's just faulty thinking. Because the evidence is, particularly in mental health, that single rooms, well-designed units, are places that enable people to, you know, create hope, dignity, and give them the privacy when they're suffering. And I suppose it's a rare chance you get people to think about mental health, but I just want your listeners to think about during COVID. Think of their worst day and they're dragging themselves out of bed and they're just not up to it. And multiply that by about 1,000, and you might even get a sense of what significant depression and mental illness is. And the premises have to be right. So COVID has actually shown that this fantasy we have about multi-occupancy somehow being adequate is wrong. And I suppose one of the lessons for the Commission is we're going to press that even more. I just say one of the other things we did during COVID was, as a regulator, sometimes our job is quite easy. We go in, we find the issues, we identify them. There's a transparency. But with COVID, we had to change because that's not good enough. There's no point in identifying something if someone dies or is injured. So what we had to do was work with the Department of Health and the HSE and actually work together to mitigate the risks. So that means we go into a place, we find it's not good enough. It's not good enough just to wait. We were able to show that straight away with the staff, identify it and fix it. And I suppose just to remind your listeners, because I know we're coming out of the pandemic, and look, I can see it in the village here, but just to remind people, like, last year in April and May, people were even worried about having the right amount of equipment, having, you know, the different protective equipment, etc. And they were all solved. And I have to say, one of the few times I've seen in my life, and I've been regulating health services for a long time, the governance was better during the pandemic because the clinical staff and the management were zoned in on protecting people. So, I mean, that's what the report captured, and we're hoping it can be used now to really drive on our health services.
And just finally then, John, I want to go back to the issue of multi-occupancy that you touched on, the fact that you may have six people in a room in Naas, but also this is an issue right around the country. And as I mentioned from the outset, you're calling for urgent investment. But put simply, what is the solution, in your opinion? Is it expansion? Do we need to build more rooms? Is that too straightforward?
No, so the solution is this. We're down to about 15 or 16 centres, and then we have community houses as well. So the community houses can be fixed, a bit like we'd fix our own local houses, and I think that's good because it distributes money in the local communities. Everything doesn't have to be done by big multinational companies, you know. There's local people who are capable of doing things. Secondly, with this, about a month ago at the HSE, we were in court in Cork because we weren't happy with one of the places with 10 people in one room. And for the first time, we got the HSE to do a rapid development or a rapid building programme where they're able to fix that unit in 10 months with 5 million investment. So we could be talking up to, you know, 100 million euros, you know, to fix this over a period of time. But, I mean, we have to invest anyway. And to me now, it's crystal clear. The idea of someone saying, well, we're going to do it in 10 years' time, I think those days are just gone. And I think most people, you know, who live, you know, all the people listening will realise that are hopefully getting into their heads that the standard of healthcare is an important thing just to make sure that they can get on with the rest of their life.
Well, CEO of the Mental Health Commission, John Farrelly, on that COVID-19 paper, which you can read more details on the Mental Health Commission website. Thanks as always for your time this morning, John, and good morning to you. All right, let's go to Studio 2 then and Ciara Noble.
This day last week, the monthly meeting of the Clane Maynooth Municipal District took place, and I'm joined now by Fianna Fáil councillor for the area, Nisha O'Carroll. Good morning, Nisha.
Good morning.
We're going to start off here this morning regarding a boreen that is adjacent to Carton Avenue. You had asked the council to upgrade this. What was your response?
So the response is what we're used to with a lot of motions and questions that the councillor has put down, is that there's no funding. And I suppose it's incumbent on myself now and on other councillors as well to try and find the funding in the forthcoming year. So Carton Avenue is a well-worn path, well-used amenity we have here in the town, well-loved by everybody. And people would usually go through Carton Estate then for a walk, but Carton have been closing their gates at particular times during the day and the evening. It's very hard to predict, you know, when that gate is going to be open. But there is an old boreen that goes adjacent to Carton Avenue. And basically, it's fine, but it could be upgraded and just, it should be upgraded.
Just define what you mean by fine.
So it's old tarmac adam from 20, 30 years ago. So basically, the main thing I'm looking for is surface dressing, so that it's dressed properly, there's no potholes on it, that it's safe for people to walk on, it's safe for people with buggies or prams and wheelchairs, etc., and that they can go down that footpath safely. So hopefully, look, I think we need to try and find the funding, and once we find the funding, we'll be able to do it. And I think it's definitely a worthwhile cause, and all the other councillors in the district agreed with that as well.
And do you foresee finding that funding anytime soon, Nisha?
The difficulty it's always trying to find funding. The only real funding stream would be local property tax. So we would try and see if we'd try and get costs, first of all, how much it would cost to do it. The area engineer has said that he'll come back to us and would give us an estimate of the works, and then we can try and put a project together.
And as of now, have you any idea what that estimate would be?
How long is a piece of string? No idea.
Yeah. I've heard that answer before. So, Nisha, just to turn now to speed surveys. You're looking for one on the Moy Glare Road. What did the council say in response?
Yeah, what they said in response really was, we're going into the summer and it wouldn't be the ideal time. So you have two new, the Maynooth Community College and Maynooth Post Primary, the new buildings are located now up where Moy Glare Hall is. So there is a far greater footfall traffic, cycle traffic, but also vehicular traffic as well. And what they said is, look, what we'd like to do would be do this when schools are back to normal, because obviously secondary schools are finished now, term time is finished. So the ideal time would be to do it around, let's say, after September. The main reason for bringing this as well is, if you go from the boys' school in Maynooth, it's literally a stretch of road, a straight stretch of road for over a kilometre. So cars tend to speed. There is a set of traffic lights outside Maria Villa, which haven't been turned on yet. There's also a set of traffic lights outside Moyder Abbey, which haven't been turned on, or they have been turned on, I beg your pardon. But from Moyder Abbey, as far as the boys' school, you know, it's a complete stretch of road and there tends to be a lot of speeding on it. So what I've asked in the interim is that the council actually consult with Cairn Homes, who built Maria Villa, to open up that road that goes through the estate, but also to turn on those lights, because what it'll do, first and foremost, is it will relieve traffic in the town centre, and second of all, it should slow traffic on the Moy Glare Road as well.
Okay, and just finally, Nisha, you asked in regards to the considered improvement works on the green that's on Pound Lane in Maynooth. Just let us know exactly where that is in the town.
So if people know the main street, you have on one side, you have the square and then Doctor's Lane, etc. The other side of the main street, where you have Maynooth Bookshop, Supermax, etc. Behind Supermax, there is back lanes there and Pound Lane. So there's a big green in that area. And you also have St. Mary's Bass and Reed Band have their band hall beside it. So that green area there it's underutilised, and I think we could do a lot more with it. There has been a tendency for antisocial behaviour to happen at the back of the green, and a lot of residents have been concerned about it. The Gardaí are aware about it as well. And I think we need to lighten it up, brighten it up and provide more seating. I think everywhere in the county, you know, needs more outdoor seating, places for people to sit, enjoy their takeaway food, etc. We're living in a completely different world, and people are particularly, you know, during the summer, you know, we've been told it's a summer of outdoor dining and outdoor festivities, etc.
Yeah, no, exactly. We have been told to have an outdoor summer, but the council have said that there are no immediate plans to improve the area, meaning that we probably won't see that for this outdoor summer.
No, we probably won't, but what we could do and what I've been encouraging the council to do is, first of all, you know, kind of make sure that the grass is cut, etc., that it's bright, that it's clean, and if we do that, we're providing a safe, clean area for people to go and an attractive area for people to go. If, you know, the grass is too tall or too high or whatever, or if somewhere isn't clean, it isn't attractive for people to go. And I think that's something that we need to keep in mind as well. And just ensuring that the Gardaí continue or increase even their beats around that area to try and stop or at least control the antisocial behaviour that goes on there.
Okay, well, Councillor Anisha O'Carroll of the Clanmaynooth Municipal District, thank you for joining us, and we will have lots more following this short break.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, a couple of messages then coming into us on the text and the WhatsApp. Own, do you know, is there only a certain age group that can get their vaccination with their GP? As in, I understand it was age 70 and over, yet I know people in their 30s who are getting vaccinated with their GP, and older people have to travel to City West or Punchestown to get theirs. Can't understand why this is, why people in their 50s and 60s can't get it with their GP. I don't know, to be honest. The only thing that I can think of is maybe the people or the incident that you're referencing in their 30s were medically vulnerable, but I'm not entirely sure of the exact situation in relation to that one. Another text in saying smoking plus COVID equals disaster, even for those inhaling smoke from others. That's in relation to the smoking topic coming up after 10 past 10. Happy 11th wedding anniversary to my husband, Ger Flynn. Lots of love from his wife, B. Thanks indeed for that message, and a very happy anniversary to both of you. Bea and Ger Flynn tuned into us this morning. And finally for now, there was another text came in. Morning, Owen. Now that we can drink and dine outside premises and also use their toilets, surely it's time that these big stores should open their toilets up again. It can take a while to find stuff you need in big stores. In fairness to Tesco, they've kept theirs open all the time. Many thanks. And that comes in from Bill. Keep your messages coming in. 0833 97 97 97. But I want to welcome to the programme now Thomas O'Connor. He's the Kildare and West Wicklow Irish Farmers Association Chairman. Thomas, welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen, and thanks for the opportunity to speak here this morning.
Yeah, the IFA holding a nationwide day of action today gets underway at 11 o'clock to highlight the importance of commercial farming to the rural economy. You'll be in 30 county towns, including in Naas here in Kildare.
Yes, that's the plan. We're going to start gathering in Woody's car park around 10:30, and we'll be making our way through the town around 11 a.m. Our aim is not to cause too much inconvenience to the general public, but it's important that we emphasise the importance of agriculture to the economy, and especially the rural economy, and a county with such a proud farming tradition as Kildare. Last year, I think the Irish agriculture, in the year of COVID, contributed about $13 billion to export, and we're involved with about 300,000 people involved either directly or indirectly with agri employment. That's something that I think we cannot forget, and we just want to emphasise that message and get a clear picture out to the government and to the EU of the importance of agriculture.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You just preempted my second question, was who exactly are you trying to highlight this to? It's the government and the EU, and the fact that you are trying to highlight it would suggest that you don't feel as though it's been appreciated, the impact or the importance that farming has.
Definitely, Owen. Under the current cap negotiations, it's looking like the picture of the current Irish farmers, it could be changed. And that's not something, change for in a detriment the way agriculture is going to be in this country, and that's not in our favour. And the same with the climate action bill, the way it's working out. I don't understand how a country like Ireland, where we're greener than green, producing quality products, and they want us to reduce and start importing products of inferior quality from other parts of the world, just so we can be top of the class in when it comes to the green agenda.
Okay, let me just hold you there, Thomas, to expand on that point, because I'm sure there's farmers listening to us this morning who will completely understand what you're talking about and be nodding their heads in agreement with you. For other people who are not from a farming background, these are maybe just words that don't make any sense. So you're saying that the approach to CAP reform by the EU and the government's climate action bill could shut down commercial farming in Ireland. In simple terms, what exactly is going on here?
The simplest way I'll explain the CAP to our listeners, Owen, is the CAP was introduced to compensate farmers for producing quality food at a cheap price for European consumers. And it has been eroded. And the funny thing is, Irish farmers have been producing food to a higher standard than we ever produced before. So the logic of it doesn't make any sense. If we have a higher cost of production because we are producing a higher product standard than anywhere else. So if we have to produce to a higher standard, we need to be getting a higher price.
The argument could be made then, in relation to the government's climate action bill, the argument could be made that farmers don't care about climate action, or they're not putting enough emphasis or highlighting or importance on climate action. Is that true?
Far from it. Farmers are going to be the people leading the way. If we want to make real changes on getting the climate in the right direction, it's agriculture that's going to be the driving force. We're the ones that can make the biggest changes. We are after adapting so many different and new technologies. And there's a time lag between when we introduce the technologies and when we're going to see results from them. And we're currently in that time lag. And agriculture are going to be the ones. We've invested, in the last 2 years, Irish farmers have invested 80 million in low emission slurry spread, which reduces the amount of ammonia being released into the atmosphere. We've doubled the amount of protected urea, which is a more stable product in drier conditions, which is happening due to the weather, the way it's changed. And we've invested 2.5 billion in pollution prevention. The farmers of the last, this decade, this generation of farmers, Owen, have planted more hedgerows than the generation of farmers for 200 years before that. And we're not getting recognised for what we're doing. We've been told the whole time that we're doing things wrong, but yet we're not being given any guidance or government of what we should be doing. All we're getting told is we're doing wrong and not given any direction what we should be doing. And people need to recognise that farmers are the future. This is the agri-industry is the backbone of this Irish Irish economy. And people are forgetting that.
So the day of action, it gets underway this morning at 11 across towns right across the country. Farmers are meeting at Nace Farm Machinery in the Maudlands Industrial Estate on the Monreed Road at 10:30, planning to leave at 11, travel in their agricultural vehicles through the town. I'm assuming the majority will be tractors, Thomas.
We're hoping so.
Okay, we'll disperse then at the Kilcullen roundabout just past the Garda station. I believe you've been in touch with Nace Gardaí and they're aware of the plans. Are you expecting a big turnout this morning?
We'd great, fantastic buy-in both from farmers and agri-industry, because if farming goes bad, so will the agri-industry. So we're expecting a sizeable crowd. And we're going to apologise for delaying any of the general public. We know you're our customers. But at the end of the day, it's vitally important that we get our message across today.
Okay, Thomas O'Connor, Kildare and West Wicklow IFA Chairman, thanks indeed for joining us on the programme this morning, and good morning to you. So just a reminder again of that day of action. If you're in the Nace area, farmers meeting at Nace Farm Machinery in the Maudlands Industrial Estate, that's on the Monreed Road. They're leaving at 11 o'clock. They'll be travelling, as Thomas said, the majority of the farmers will be in tractors going through the town, and will disperse at the Kilcullen roundabout just past the Garda station, so delays might be expected on that particular route. Ciara, back to you.
On Wednesday, Claire Dunn, a member of the Irish Travel Agents Association, noted it is now no longer illegal to holiday abroad. The European Parliament passed the EU's proposal for vaccine passports. I am now joined by Alan Lynch, the Managing Director of Travel Escapes and Irish Travel Agents Association board member, who is calling for swift and uniform implementation of EU travel guidelines. Good morning, Alan.
And to your listeners.
Alan, just to start off, what exactly detail-wise is in these vaccine certificates for the actual general public? Your date of birth, I assume?
Yeah, well, basically, first of all, this is great news for everybody because it's bringing us back to the freedom to travel. And from the 1st of July, most EU countries will be adopting the green digital cert, and that will come in two forms, either digital or a document. And as you say, it will have information on depending on what criteria that you meet. So you will, for instance, would need to have, to avail of this digital cert, you would need to have be fully vaccinated. You would have to have a negative PCR test or have recovered from the virus. In other words, you've had COVID and you've recovered from it. And that means that you can travel within the EU.
Alan, just to stop you there, does that mean somebody who's fully vaccinated also needs to have a negative PCR test before boarding their flight?
No, you have to have one of the three.
Okay.
of the three, yeah.
Because I was just checking out the European Commission's website a little earlier, and just to let the listeners know, it obviously breaks down the country and their readiness for people coming in to their country. So for Denmark, for example, technically ready to connect to the EU DCC gateway, yes, effectively connected, issuing and or verifying at least one EU DCC vaccination recovery or negative test, as Alan just mentioned, yes. But if you look at Ireland, the answer to the first question, we are technically ready to connect, yes, but are we effectively connected? The answer is no. And that's what the problem is for the Irish Travel Agents Association, isn't it, Alan?
Yeah, well, what we're looking at is that Ireland have announced that we will be ready from the 19th of July, and we're just looking for clarity on that, that will, in actual fact, happen. Now, we've no reason to believe that it won't happen, but we just need to see and get all the details that are necessary for everybody to be able to travel because, you know, in a sense, as I say, it's good news, and all the travel agents around Ireland are a bit like the Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen at the start of a race, or revving up our engines, getting ready to go, and the inquiries are coming in through our own agency and through the ITA colleagues around the reports are that the inquiries are quite strong. The bookings aren't as strong as we'd like them to be, and that's really what we're looking for, is a little bit of clarity on that.
Okay, because obviously anybody listening, they've no doubt that the travel sector has been greatly impacted by this pandemic. It's an obvious. But In terms of obviously people going on holidays, they are fearful. They know last summer that they were able to go abroad. Some people did go abroad. Obviously, there was different restrictions at the time. There was lower case numbers here in this country. And then when we did start to go abroad, the case numbers in this country did rise significantly. We were speaking to Professor Kingston Mills yesterday, Alan, about the fact that this country is nowhere near herd immunity. And even the World Health Organization noted that Europe is nowhere near herd immunity, or even at the levels they would like to see in terms of vaccinations. It's a difficult question to ask, but can't you see people's fear of actually going out and booking these holidays when they've literally spent a year and a half so scared of this virus and have not been told by the health officials that, oh, all is well, take your guard down?
Yeah, I hear you. What I would say, there's a couple of points that you've raised there, and unfortunately I didn't hear what Kingston Mills had to say yesterday, but what I would say is that a lot of countries that depend on tourism, like the likes of Greece, Spain, they are vaccinating in fact, in some cases in Greece, some islands are completely vaccinated. They've got all their, not only the hospitality workers like in other words, the people who are front of house that are serving you the meals or serving you your drink or greeting you at your hotel, they've all been vaccinated, but so too has everybody on the island been vaccinated. So there are safe places to go to. Once you meet that criteria, as we said earlier on, once you meet one of those three criteria, otherwise you won't get into the country. So there are, it is gathering up pace. We're not all going on the way that Ireland are going in the way of we're doing it by age. They're doing it by to make sure that their economy opens. So, yes, I do understand there is a little bit of hesitancy, and that's why we see that most of the bookings that we're now doing is probably for the latter end of September, beginning to October. But it is gathering pace from there on because, you know, I think I heard today that there's over a million vaccinated or will be, and we'll have 70% of the Irish public vaccinated by the end of July. So, you know, we're going in the right direction.
Yeah, currently there's about 26% of people who've been fully vaccinated in this country, and 3.1 million doses of the vaccine have been given out. About I can't fully remember the details, but just under 2 million have received a first dose. So we're a long way off.
There's so many figures going around here, it's impossible to keep up with them, you know. But I think that sounds good, yeah.
Obviously, official figures, though, there, Alan. Look, Alan Lynch, Managing Director of Travel Escapes and the Irish Travel Association's board member, thank you for joining us. And just after this break...
Can I just say to you that if a person is booking, is to make sure that they do book with an ITA licensed travel agent, because, you know, if you don't and something does happen, unfortunately, you're going to be on your own, and it's as simple as that. You're not going to be protected. So make sure that you do book through a travel agent, because they know all the information that we've been talking about this morning.
Thank you, Alan. And just after this break, Owen will have a preview of what's coming up in the second hour of Kildare Today.